Okay, last week we started Parsha Shaftim on 10:24. So now we're on Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So what we learned before so far is you're not allowed, you have to set up the courts, you're not allowed to be corrupt, you're not allowed to recognize facing, you're not allowed to take bribes, you have to go and do righteousness, right, go after proper bezdin and so on. Now the Torah says like this, Leisita locha asheira kol eitz. You are not allowed to plant an asheira tree, any type of adulterous tree, and that's the definition of asheira, means a tree that's planted for idols, kol eitz, anything out of wood, eitz el mizbach Hashem alakecha, asher tasaloch, next to the mizbech. The Gemara explains that in the time of the idol worshippers, their custom was, next to their altar, they would plant a tree. And therefore the Torah says, I don't want it next to the Mizbeach, because that was the way of idolaters, and,
They used trees
for that, and by the way, when it says, Eitzel Mizbach Hashem Elokecha, the Rambam writes, doesn't mean mamish near the Mizbeach. Anywhere in the Azara, anywhere in the Beis HaMikdash area, was forbidden to plant a tree. And that's why, by the way, even Bizman Hazeh, you can't plant trees. Many people have a minig not even to do trees in a shul. They'll have flowers in that, but not actual trees because of the sasheda. Because people would plant it for idol worship because Hashem didn't want anything. And it says, by the way, even the planting of the tree itself is when you get the sin. Even if the tree doesn't grow, the Torah says you shouldn't plant. So as soon as you plant, that's already something which is forbidden. And then we'll see a few more psukim. There's a lot of connection between all these psukim. Leisakim l'chom atzeva, you're not allowed to erect yourself a pillar. Asher sani Hashem l'kecha that Hashem despises. Okay? Now, a matzeva basically is different than a mizbeach. A matzeva is one stone. That Rashi says, matzeva achas. Okay? Even at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, even when they were allowed to do bomes, altars and their own before the Beis HaMikdash, they were not allowed to make a single matzeva. Because that's the way the Goyim did it. You know, the Hashem wanted everything in Yiddishkeit should be completely different, completely, than the idol worshippers in every extent. And he says, you only have to make Mizbach Avonim, Mizbach Mizbach Adoma, that Hashem wants. And he says, even though we find in Chumash, Yaakov Avinu made a matzeva by the dream over there. He said he made a matzeva. Avraham Yitzchak made a matzeva. So the Gemara, the Medrash says, even though Hashem loved it in the days of the patriarchs, in the days of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, Hashem loved it, but not nowadays. And there's a very interesting thing in Yiddishkeit. There are certain things that there are old Jewish customs to do. And once the Goyim took it over, it became customary not to do it. Huh? No, because... What? I'll give you an example, even though nowadays they do it. For instance, there was always the Jewish minhag at a funeral to wear black.
Yeah.
Okay? There are many opinions today that say you shouldn't wear black at a funeral. Because the Goyim took it over. It became like a Goyish thing. The mourning of the Goyim was to be... And in fact, there's a lot of dinim with the colors of clothes.
So you wear red? If you don't wear black, you wear red.
A hot pink. Yeah, in Beis Hanav they also wore black at funerals, but there are many things that became, I forgot, there's so many other key things that became forbidden to do because the Goyim took it over. In fact, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it says that, take Shulchan Aruch, it speaks about clothing enough, it says one place says you're not allowed to wear green, another place says you're not allowed to wear white, another place, in all the same place, the different opinions, you can't wear black, you can't wear red, you can't wear, I mean, you name the color, over there it says you can't wear it. And it wasn't that they're arguing. In that place, the goyim wore black. That was their garment. So it's forbidden for a Jew to wear black. In certain places, the goyim wore white. If that was the custom of the goyim, then you had to change the custom and not wear white. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the Kabbalah, so to speak. If that was what the goyim wear, and the Torah says, even though the Asherah tree is, what is a tree? A tree is something Hashem makes. I mean, what's the problem with a tree? And the same thing with the Matzeva. But the bottom line is, because the goyim took it over, it became what's called Chukas HaGoy, and therefore it's not done anymore.
The Polish
nobility wore it, but it wasn't as idol worshipping, it wasn't a religious thing. It wasn't a religious color. Mm. It was just a sign of nobility. Mm. And therefore they took over that nobility from them. But it was, okay. That, so the Torah says you can't plant any type of tree next to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, you can't take a pillar, single stone for any sort, because that's what the Goyim did. It has to be for many stones, and from the earth, Mizbach Adamim, Mizbach Avonim, it had to be plural. Now, it says in the Medrash that on Shlema Melech's throne, they had six steps. There were six steps up to Shlomo HaMelech's throne. On the first one, it said, Loisata Mishpat, these six negative commandments. So it says, the first step, it said, when he went on the step, a voice came out and said, Loisata Mishpat, don't corrupt judgment. When he went to the second step, it announced, Loisakir Panim, don't recognize people because of the wealth or whatever. The third step was leisikach sheichad, don't take bribery. Fourth step was leisita locha sheira, don't plant these idol trees. And the fifth one it says leisakim locha matzeva, don't bring an altar from one single stone. And the sixth was the next pasuk leizizbach l'Hashem alakecha, you can't bring a sacrifice of an animal that has a blemish. Okay, so l'chaira the question is, I understand the first three make sense on a throne. Don't corrupt, don't take bribery, don't, you know, but not to plant a tree. What does it have to do with Shlomo HaMelech judging the people? So the Kli Yakir explains, because this is all interconnected to the content, and that's why the Torah puts it next to the Torah speaks about judges, you know? All of a sudden it says don't plant an Asherah tree next to the Mizbeach, like, what's the connection? But all these things represent also the concept of judgment. Talmud Chacham is called, there's a pasuk in Shlach, when Moshe Rabbeinu sent the spies, Hashem said to him, Ayesh po eitz im ayin. See if there's trees or not. And Rashi says in Pasha Shlach, what does eitz mean? It doesn't mean tree. If there's trees, I mean, what's the big deal? Eitz refers to a Talmud Chacham. If there's, see if there's holy people there, if there's any kedusha there, you know, from that they would have a schus for. When they appoint the judges, they have to be clear from any blemishes. In fact, physical blemishes, spiritual blemishes. So God says, not only is it important judgment not to take bribes and not to be corrupt and all that, but even leisita l'cha asherah represents in the court shouldn't be a rabbi of aveidah zarah. Meaning that his beliefs, his hashkafe, his understanding of Yiddishkeit should be corrupt. You can't have an Asherah tree, meaning a Talmud Chacham who's an idol worshipper. Either
free thinker,
or he's somebody that thinks he's God's gift to the world, or God himself, whichever one. And the second one is...
You feel like a God?
1 minute. Matzeva. What does Matzeva mean? Kli Yakir explains very interesting. What's a Matzeva? Matzeva is one stone. Right? The Mizbech had to be many stones, or from earth. Mizbech Avonim, plural. Matzeva is one stone. This is the concept, what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Al Tihidon Yechidi. Don't judge alone. should always have bezdin of three. So the Torah says, don't make a matseva, is also connected to the court, because Hashem says, I don't want you to judge individually. You need a bezdin. Only God judges alone. And the last of the six that we didn't learn yet, but they sizbach l'Hashem alakecha, not to bring a carbon with a mum, it means the judges shouldn't have any spiritual blemishes to them. So he explained these six psukim, even though only three of the six sound like court-related issues, but the bottom line is all of these things are court-related. The Asherah tree represents a dayan that's not a proper eitz, he's not a proper Talmud Chacham, and Matseva refers to a single stone, not to judge individually alone. You should always have a bezdin, and not to have any blemishes, both in the people and the court cases and the decision. Everything should be completely separate. Well, then what?
If the blemish. They didn't have a single stone, so what did they have instead?
Where?
For the sacrifice.
No, the Mizbech was made out of stones. Many stones.
But it was...
Many
wasn't
stones.
A single stone?
No. No.
So Mizbech was several stones?
A bunch of stones. Sure. Heated stones in a mold. The shape of the Mizbech. That's what it was. But that's what the Torah is explicitly saying over here. You cannot have an altar, a Mizbeach, with one stone. Even Avraham Yitzchok and Yaakov did it, like we said before. In those days it was good, but afterwards, after Matan Torah, Hashem said no.
One stone meaning like a rock? And
yeah. No, they had to have many rocks.
But blemish is physical, is very important. Why is it spiritually important?
We'll get, when we learn, we didn't learn that pasuk yet, I just jumped the gun. When we get to the pasuk, we'll learn about the blemishes and, but the Mefarshim say another interesting thing, the Shachal HaTayra writes, that there's, these six mitzvahs correspond with the 6 days of creation.
Wow.
And he says like this, the first one is Laisata Mishpat, like the pasuk says, in pasuk Yutes, do not pervert judgment, okay? It means that's corresponding with the first day of creation. What happened? Hashem separated between night and dark, then day and night, meaning everything was exact. Light, night didn't mix with day. You know, you didn't turn night into day, day into everything was, it was straight, not crooked. The second one, Leisaki Panim, not to find favoritism in judgment. That was the second day when the Malachim were created. According to one opinion, some argument in the Medrash, if the Malachim were created on day two or day five. There's two opinions in the Medrash. But here's the opinion that the Malachim were created. And meaning, what does it mean, Leisakir Panim? Means, don't worship the angels. Don't recognize Panim, if you look in Yecheskel, the Pnei, the Malachim had the faces of the Malachim, right? Speaks about the faces of the Malachim. So he says, the second day of creation, Hashem created Malachim, so Hashem said, don't recognize them as any being that has authority or ability to do anything on its own. They're the axe, like we learned many times, the axe in the hand of the chopper, you don't praise the axe, or you don't say thank you to the axe, because they have no say in the matter. Same thing the Malachim. The third thing, it says, don't take bribery. And this is an interesting thing. On the third day, Hashem created vegetation. Trees, vegetation. Now, in the Pasuk, and this is another whole issue that needs to be understood, and probably not for now either. But it says like this. Hashem said, Tachi Ardes Desha, Eitz Pri, a fruit tree, Aisapri Lamine that makes fruits. Hashem wanted, Rashi calls this at the beginning of Chumash, that the trunk of the tree should taste like the fruit of the tree. And that's what he says. Hashem said, here, Teiti Arz Desha, Rashi says, Hashem wanted, Shiyei Tam Ha'etz Ketam Apri. That's what Hashem told the trees to do. the earth should give out trees that the fruit and the tree taste the same. Rashi said, but the earth didn't listen. What did the earth do? It says, the pasuk says the trees made fruits, but it doesn't say the tree tasted like the fruit. And the earth was punished because when Adam and Eve sinned, Hashem said, the earth is going to be cursed for not listening to Hashem. L'cheira, the earth has no free choice. That is a whole separate issue, okay? When we go around the next time, we'll maybe discuss it. Anyway, so he says like this. So what happened over here?
The third day.
So what says, why did the earth not listen? What did the earth care? To give out trees that taste like the fruit? What did the earth care? So he says, because the earth learned from God. God made light on the first day and he hid it. So they learned that the wicked shouldn't benefit from this great light that Hashem created on the first day. So he hid it for tzaddikim and teira, whatever. So they also, the earth also meant for good, because we don't want the wicked people to benefit from the trees before the fruits grow. So they took it. So he says, Lepoil, that's the inyan of sheichad, a bribery. In other words, what happens when you take bribes? You don't paskin, you don't rule the way you're supposed to rule, because you're bribed. So the same thing, the earth didn't listen to Hashem. So this corresponds with the third day of creation. Don't plant trees. That's the fourth day of creation, when God made the sun and the moon, and Hashem said, don't worship them. Don't worship them like the Asherah tree. The fifth one, don't have a single matzeva. So he says that refers to when the taninim agdolim, that you shouldn't have any pestle, any images of the things in the heaven above and the earth below, that correspond to the fifth day. The sixth day, he says, like sizbach, and the Medrash says an interesting thing. When Adam and Eve brought a carbon the first day, he brought a blemished carbon. That's what he says. He says, Shabai hikriv Adam carbon balmum. And because of that, Hashem says, don't bring an animal with the mum. So these six mitzvahs pertaining to judgment, which is the key to the existence of the world, morality and everything, Hashem says, correspond to the 6 days of creation, are these six negative commandments that the Torah says you have to keep. Okay, then the Torah says like this. What's the next pasuk? Pasuk Aleph. You shouldn't sacrifice to Hashem a shirer, an ox, or a lamb, a sheyia baimum, that will have a blemish to it. Kol davara, any bad thing. And then it says, what does it mean, kol davara? Kol davara means don't bring bad sacrifices. What does it mean? At the time it was called pigol. At the time you shech the carbon, you think of eating it after the allotted time, or the thoughts of eating it outside of the place where you're allowed to eat it. So Hashem says, don't bring any blemished carbonus. This is an abomination of Hashem. Okay, this is what the pasuk says. Because if you bring an animal with a blemish, it shows like you're giving God second grade stuff. You know, you have to give Hashem the Kol chelev l'Hashem, I have to give him the best. What does this mean in a personal way? Okay? So it says like this. A person also has to bring, remember we discussed the pasuk, Adam ki yakev mikem karbon l'Hashem. The person will bring a karbon to Hashem. So the pasuk doesn't say Adam mikem ki yakev. The person from your midst will bring a karbon. The pasuk says Adam ki yakev, Mikem carbon l'Hashem. You have to bring a carbon from yourself. Okay? Meaning, a Jew has an animal within them, Yetzahara. Okay? And that's what the pasuk says. Min ha-behema, min ha-bakar u min ha-tzein. From the animal, from the cattle, or from the lamb. Yeah? Takrivo is korbanchem. You have to bring a carbon. So what is the Torah teaching us about a person bringing a korban? It's not only talking about the physical animal that you're bringing. It's also referring to the spiritual sacrifice that a Jew makes within themselves. What's the sacrifice a Jew makes? It could be shared or set. Just like over there it says min abaka from the cattle, which refers to big animals like an ox, or minatzayim, the sheep, the easier animals. You have a person has a yetzahara that's like an ox. He gores, aggressive, hurting people, you know, mean. And then you have, like we learned many times, a sheep, a shepsila. Shepsila, live and let live. I don't bother you, you don't bother me, let me eat and drink and be merry. I don't bother you, I don't gore you, just let me enjoy life. So whether you have a carbon like a shud or a sem, the Torah says, before you bring your carbon, before you sacrifice your animal to Hashem, you need to make sure there are no blemishes. What was the din when a person brought a carbon? Just the way it wasn't a physical carbon. A person had an obligation to check the animal and make sure there were no blemishes. That was the din. You couldn't bring a blemish, like it says here, you can't bring a blemished animal. So before a person brought a carbon, in fact, the Gemara says 4 days, you had to check the animal and make sure there were no noticeable blemishes that you could see. What does it mean in a spiritual sense? If you want to bring your animal as a carbon to Hashem, your yetzahara, your animal soul within you, you need to first know your good parts and your bad parts. You need to know your blemishes. How in the world can you bring a sacrifice to God if you don't know what needs to be fixed? Bringing a carbon means I want to become karov. Carbon, karov. I want to become closer to Hashem. If I don't know what I'm bringing, if I'm going to fool myself and trick myself and misguide myself, so then how in the world can I bring this carbon? It's not going to work. And this is what Hashem is saying over here also. Or called over any evil. Why? Because what God really despises is a Jew who fools themselves. Fooling yourself is a blemish. Now the blemish could be a negative blemish and it could be a positive blemish.
Such as?
Negative blemish means you don't know your faults. And a positive blemish, you don't know your strengths. You don't know your greatness. You need to know both. And if you have one without the other, it's a blemish. If you are better than what you think you are, that's a blemish, because you think you're worse than what you really are. If I think I'm better than I am, that's a blemish in a negative way. I'm worse than I think I am. So the Torah says, any type of blemish that a person has is an abomination that Hashem hates it. What are you coming to me as a faker? You want to come to me? I want truth. Hashem says, I want truth. Yeah? Don't give me these blemishes which represents the falsehood, the fake impression that we have of ourselves. So whatever, both ways, good and bad. Hashem says, don't give it to me. I don't want it. And that's what this pasuk means, because it's an abomination of Hashem for anything that's bad. Okay, now, so Mefarshim explain like this. Hashem warns us first about proper justice. Then he says about the importance of the place of the Beis HaMikdash don't have any Asherah trees. Then Hashem says, bring the animals which are proper. Okay? So he says, if you think you did it, but you did it wrong, he says, then it's an abomination to Hashem. It could be very negative to Hashem for doing such a thing. Okay, now it says like this. Ki matzei bekir b'cha. Oh, by the way, one more thing the Mefarshim say. Also the Shachar LaTorah says that, what does it mean, leisita l'cha sheda, don't make yourself into an idol. Like Pari did, you know, everybody had to hum and everybody had to bow to him. He thought he was an idol. It says, don't make yourself an idol. And that's why it says, leisita l'cha asheda. Don't make yourself this idol tree. Don't worship yourself. You need to worship God, not yourself. Like we know, there's a very big difference today, in today's world, between worshiping God or worshiping your body. In other words, being healthy is worshiping Hashem. Hashem says you have to be healthy. Like the Rambam writes, "Hayes a good body v'tshalim medarkei avaydas Hashem." Who the Rambam writes, you have to be healthy. But there's a difference between worshiping Hashem through your body or worshiping your body. You know, that's all that matters. The body, the body. That's also an abomination. Okay, now the pasuk goes into the laws basically of avaydas zara. The pasuk says like this: Kimatze bekir b'cha, if it will be found in your midst, ba'achat shorecha, in any one of your cities, asher Hashem alakecha neisin lach, that God gives you, isha isha, a man or a woman, doesn't matter, asher yase ahatzara be'enei Hashem alakecha, they do the evil in the eyes of God, laver b'risei, to transgress the covenant of Hashem. What did they do? Vayelech, he goes, Vayaved alakim acherim, he goes worship other gods. Vayishtachu lohem, and he bows to them. Okay, what is the covenant? Hashem said, do not worship idols. But the person bows down to the idol. V'lashemesh or liyareach, whether it's to the sun or to the moon, or l'chol tzva shemayim, or to any of the hosts of the heaven, asheleitzi visi, that God commanded that you can't serve them. That's commanded that you can't serve any of these sun, moons, stars, any of these things. So the person did evil, and the pasuk translates what does evil mean in the true sense of the word, going to worship other gods. We learned many times, avodas, it's interesting, in many places it's called avodas elilim, worshipping gods, other gods. Usually in Torah, in many places, it's called Aveda Zara. Aveda Zara means foreign Aveda. That's literally what the word means. It's loosely translated as idol worshipping is called Aveda Zara. Right? But really, Aveda Zara means foreign worship. Aveda Zara, Chazal tell us, and there's elaborated a lot in Musa Sfarim, Chassidus Sfarim, all the, you know, Hashkafas Sfarim that deal with Yiddishkeit. Aveda Zara doesn't mean you bow down to an idol. That's not what it means. Aveda Zara means you worship anything that's not God.
Including money?
Money is the golden calf. He called money the Egel Azov. Worshipping money. Anytime a person worships anything, in other words, it could be food, it could be clothing, it could be sports, it could be iPhones, it could be anything that controls you.
TV.
That's old fashioned.
It's gone. No more. iPhone.
Who needs TVs today?
These newfangled diets have become really much like Abu Dhabi.
I'm telling you, people worship fads and diets and sports and actors and any of these things that people go crazy and allows it to take over their life. Not only is it an addiction, but it's actually a Aveda Zara. It's foreign to the Jew. And that's what the Torah is speaking about over here. The Torah is not only speaking about mamish bowing down to the sun or to the moon or to any idol, because this didn't apply to any idol. Worshipping something means you hold it in high esteem. You hold it in high esteem, and it dictates your life, and it controls you, and this is what you're worshipping. It's a very broad term.
It's not applicable to someone like Chafna, someone has a rav, or they go to...
It could apply to anybody. Because if a person worships his own intellect, many people think, me, I understand it, it's 100% right. There's not even room for anybody else's opinion. That's worshiping Seichel, by the way. People worship their feelings. People worship their, whatever it may be. It could be a million different things. I mean, in today's world, you have a million examples of what people could worship. Somebody could worship intellect. They could worship their own intellect. You know, this is it. That's 100% right, and there's nothing to talk about. Unless a person says, this is what Torah says, that's a different story. If you say what Torah says, then it's not you, it's what Torah says. You know? But if a person, I'll give you another interesting way, and religious people are not going to say it openly, obviously, but down deep a religious person might think that this aspect of Torah doesn't make sense. I mean, you can have a religious person that can think, you know, this thing, this mitzvah, or the way of doing the mitzvah, the observance, it doesn't make sense. Yeah? What that person just did is he worshipped an idol of his own brain versus God. God says, this is the way to do it. My brain says, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. So I'm saying, even if you don't verbally say it, but in your mind you think, you know, the way of doing this mitzvah doesn't make sense. That is, if you think about it, in a subtle way, that is Aveda Zara. You're worshipping your understanding of life over God's understanding of life. If I think I should do something one way, and Hashem Torah means thinks it should be done another way, you're idol, that's idol worshipping.
So, if you somebody reading the Torah 24 hours, is that idolship?
Why is it idol worshipping?
Because who are you worshipping? Addicted.
To God. That's good.
Something addicted. What's the difference? Something addicted.
If but who are you addicted to?
Addicted to something too much, is it bad?
No. If you're addicted to something which is not you.
What's different? Food and something else.
Okay. We discussed this in the past.
Yeah.
But for you, I'll do it again.
I'm so
no,
dumb.
No. Don't worship yourself. What the mission picker of it says, "Ein loch ben chayden, ela misha esik b'teira." There is no freedom. It doesn't say a person who learns is free. "Ein loch ben chayden, ela," and in halacha it says when it says "ein ela," it means there is no other freedom but this. That's what it means in halacha. So the mission picker of it says, "Ein loch ben chayden, there is no freedom, no freedom, only misha esik b'teira." Person that learns and keeps mitzvahs. Yeah, that's what it means. So, in a secular perspective, from a goyish perspective, it doesn't make sense. Torah says what you could think, speak, do. Torah says, from the second you wake up in the morning, we're going to control you until you go to sleep. From the second you're born until you die, we're going to control you. How to business, we're going to control you. How to go to the bathroom, we're going to control you. How to talk to this guy, huh?
Have a shower.
Yeah, whatever it is. Torah dictates your life from the second you wake up, the second you're born, until you die. 24/7 for 120 years. Yeah. That's freedom?
It's an O. It's a yoke.
That's freedom? What type of freedom is that? I have no freedom. The problem is, and this is where this the explanation of this thing is really like this. The definition of freedom. The definition of freedom is when I control myself, nobody else controls me. If you control me, I'm not free. I'm a slave to you. Okay? Like we said many times, you go home at night, you lock the door. You guys be quiet. Are you in jail?
No.
No. Some of the men will say, yeah. But not for that reason. Okay. You go home at night, you lock the door. Are you in jail?
No.
Are you behind the locked door?
No.
The answer is, I locked it. I can unlock it.
In my
If the door gets locked, if the lock breaks, then you're in jail, Taka.
Yeah.
Okay? What is jail? When somebody else controls you, they lock you up, and you can't get out. That means somebody else is controlling you. Somebody else doesn't necessarily mean another person. For instance,
smoking.
If the way I dress is dictated by society or by Milan, Rome, Paris, Fifth Avenue, what the fashions, yeah? So that is controlling me. That controls my life. If sports controls me, then I'm not free. If money controls me, then money, that I'm not free. Money is controlling me. Something else is controlling me. Okay? All the examples in life, society controls me, this controls me, everything controls me. I'm a slave. We don't realize it though. But the bottom line is, we're a slave to society. We dress accordingly, eat accordingly, talk accordingly. We're slaves to society. Society dictates our life. It's not my freedom.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
Is that what it's all
about? One second. Mm-hmm. If a person, you have to, another thing you need to understand. My intellect, my intelligence is not me. If you love your child, it doesn't matter if they're smart, not so smart, brilliant. You love them the same. So it's not when they become smarter, you love them more. Because you don't, the person is not the intellect. Like when the Tzemach Tzedek was a little kid, he was sitting on Altrebbe's lap, and he touched Altrebbe's beard, and he said, Zayda, Zayda. So Altrebbe said, that's not the Zayda, that's the Zayda's beard, nose, or whatever it was. It's not the person. Our intellect is not me. If I allow my intellect to control me, I am a slave to my intellect.
Yeah.
It's better than being a slave to somebody else, by the way. But the bottom line is, me, whoever me is, we'll soon see, me is a slave to intellect. It might be my intellect, but it's not me. Who am I? Who am I? Who are you? Don't tell me your name, I know your name. Who am I? My neshama, my life, that's me. Not my nose. Could change the nose, yeah? Well, who is me? Me is my neshama. My soul, that's me. So, what is real freedom? Not when the outside world controls me. Not even when my intellect controls me. Not when my emotions control me. Real freedom is when I control myself. Now, the neshama of a Jew, which is part of Hashem, which is synonymous with Torah, and godliness, and Yiddishkeit, so the Gemara, the Mishnah is saying like this, when you are in control over yourself, i.e., you're learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs, asik b'Torah, then you are ultimate free because you are controlling yourself. Nobody else is controlling you. Not even your own intellect. Okay? Got it?
Yes.
Now, I can allow somebody else to control me, but that doesn't mean I worship it. I could do what you tell me to do. It doesn't mean I worship you. Ask me for a favor, I do it. Does it mean I worship you? No. Worshiping means my whole life is focused around that. Whether it's sports, money, clothing, food, whatever it may be. That's called slavery. That's called Avodah Zarah.
For what is mean the pleasure? Pleasure doesn't mean anything?
What do you mean pleasure?
Like you smell it.
Who was...
What pleasure
the previous Rebbe writes in the Maimed, there's many, but four general levels. There's four general levels of pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay? For instance, there's pleasure from eating and sleeping.
Yeah.
Then there's pleasure from music. Then some people have pleasure doing somebody a favor. No, people enjoy doing a favor. And then you have intellectual pleasure. Now, which one is highest and which one's lowest? Eating and drinking, pleasure, that a person, that's what animals have. Animals have pleasure from eating and drinking. So if my whole pleasure is from eating and drinking, I'm an animal. And by the way, Chassidus explains, I'm worse than an animal because animals don't know better. I'm supposed to know better. I'm acting like an animal.
It's a part of your life. You cannot say
it. I'm not saying you shouldn't eat and drink.
You should enjoy it.
And I'm saying you can enjoy it. But there's a difference between eating to live or living to eat. Right?
Eating, drink, you don't need
eating to live is good. Living to eat is not good.
It not means you enjoy it.
I'm not saying we're not on the level of eating only kale.
Yeah.
Some people enjoy it. I don't know. But you have to eat in order to be healthy. We're not on a level of not enjoying the food at all. There's no mitzvah to eat dafka what you hate. But the question is this what I'm living for, to eat, 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 eat? That's all my think about. Yeah. Okay. So, then I'm worshipping food. A more spiritual level of pleasure is music. It's still a physical pleasure, by the way. But it's more spiritual than food. Doing somebody a favor is more spiritual than that. And intellectual pleasure is the uniqueness of a person. A person which is intellectual is supposed to have pleasure. So the highest form of pleasure, and then, by the way, there's a fifth level, a pleasure of connecting to God, which is the ultimate goal. But I'm saying even in pleasures, you have many different levels.
So if you have the limited in pleasure, you are not slave of pleasure.
Correct.
So
slave of pleasure means when the food controls me, when the pleasure controls me.
Limited.
That's all I'm interested. Yeah, but then it's idol worshipping.
Is limited also idol worshipping?
What do you mean
limited?
No, limited is not.
So
no, right. But I'm saying again, if you eat to live, I'm sorry, you live to eat, and that's all you're interested. So then you're worshipping the food, and you worship. Then it's idol worshipping.
That's it. That's it.
And the Torah says, coming back to the pasuk, don't give me blemished sacrifices. Need to know who you are. Be a complete person and sacrifice yourself to God. Do it to God. It doesn't mean, by the way, killing yourself, burning yourself at the stake. It means destroying the evil Yetzer Hara that the person has. That is the covenant that a person brings to Hashem. And now when he speaks about they do to go and they serve other things, and it's interesting. The Mefarshim ask a very interesting question, not only here in the Sefer Sedibros also. What does Elokim Acherim mean? Other gods? There's no such thing as other gods. See, even in the English here it says, gods of others. Rashi says before in Chumash, by the Aser Sedibros, Rashi says, what is Elokim Acherim? Because think about it, literally, Elokim Acherim means other gods. There can't be any other, there's one god. How could Torah say other gods? So the Mefarshim, Rashi says, Elokim Acherim means that Acherim make them Elokim. Others make them God. And that's why he said, doesn't say other God, even in the Zarat scroll. He says, serve gods of others. Elokim Acherim doesn't mean other gods. It's the wrong translation. Elokim Acherim does not mean other gods. It means gods of others. That people worship. And again, like we said, it doesn't mean the sun and the moon. It could be music. It could be whatever it is. Okay. So therefore, you have like this. What happens if this guy in your midst is going and starting to worship idols? Whatever the idol may be. And you were told about it, and you heard it. You checked it out properly. You know, you don't kill somebody without checking into it. If it's true that the testimony is correct, that the taka, the person worshipped idols, then this terrible abomination was done amongst the Jews. In other words, what the Mefarshim explained, no matter how, and this is another very interesting thing that human nature doesn't do. You hear Lashon Hara about somebody, you right away make judgments. You don't hear the other side. You don't make sure to check it out. This is, by the way, very basic human nature. Huh? Normal thing, yeah. Normal, very bad thing. Somebody tells you Lashon Hara, and it's remarkable, you know, any love that listens to cases, you hear one side, you think, my God, this is, whoa. Slam dunk case for them. All of a sudden you hear the other side, you say, 1 minute, it's a whole different story. A whole different story. The Torah teaches, by the way, but the guy's worshipping idols, what do you need to do? Just kill the guy. The Torah says no. But you have to check into it, you have to seek. Look, no matter how serious the thing is, and if you find out that it was taka true, it's taken abomination, then you have to kill them. But it's a very interesting lesson. The Torah says, before you jump to conclusions that everybody always does. That's what you know, it's a very interesting halacha. In the Beis Din, or you come to Din Torah, if the Rav hears one side without the other side present, he's automatically disqualified from the case. If one side, one Rav, hears the case before the other side comes, halachically he has to disqualify himself from the case. Why? Because once you hear one side without the other present, you form opinions in your head. And that's already not kosher. Tell you a little secret, sometimes Rabbanim, they know a court case, because they don't want to sit on it, so they tell the guy, tell me your side of the story. Then after the other side of the story, they say, okay, I can't sit on it. Trick of the trade.
It's kosher?
Everything's kosher. Just don't eat it. But no, this is because of the scene. But it's very, I mean, the Torah, it's a very simple statement, but it's very profound. Mm. We hear things about people, we ought to make judgments. How bad this group is, how bad this person is, how bad this organization is. And then you hear the second side, it's a whole different story. A whole different story. And the Torah says, Drash Tehetev, you have to really check into it. There's a Chassidic word, not in this pasuk, but in a similar pasuk. It says about the Chassidic Fabrengens. When you have a Fabrengen, it's not supposed to be a prepared speech. Fabrengen is supposed to come from the heart. You're supposed to talk. And it's supposed to just flow. It's not a prepared speech. So he says like this. This is the way they define this pasuk in the Chassidic terminology. They say, V'darashta heitiv. You made a great drasha. You made a great speech. But Hine emes noch in hadover, noch means hachana. But if you prepared it, necessar to eva azeis be Yisrael, this is an abomination. For bringing, so to speak, when you talk, you know, it's supposed to be unprepared. The Torah says, v'darash to eit, if you made a great speech, but hine emes noch in hadover, you prepared it, necessar to eva azeis, that's an abomination. It has to come from the heart. What?
So if someone says they're doing a Fabrengen and they didn't prepare anything, then they actually did it right. Because sometimes you go to a Fabrengen and you expect to be people expect it to be a Seder of...
There is no question.
...shots, then they did it, they didn't do it correctly.
Correct.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, you know, you need to, it has to come, you know, spontaneously. Okay, so what do you do with this?
Excuse me, Rabbi, I mean, if someone's having a brain, the person can't say, okay, I'm going to talk a little bit.
Oh, that's not, but I'm saying to prepare, you know, like you prepare a speech. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they have camel, well, I mean, you got to have something to say, but... But most of the talking has to flow rather than prepared text.
Not a speech.
I mean, please don't come so early.
Second minya.
6 to be exact. Wait, say it says, it depends which clock, yeah. Wait, say it says, Aishahu. So what do you have to do? After you check out and you found that he was guilty, okay? Right, say it's a isha or it's a isha he. Or you say, you take out the man or the woman. Asha also sadover ala ze el shorech to your gates. As a isha, whether it's the man or a woman. Uskautam bavanam v'meso, and you have to stone them and you kill them. Now it's interesting. The Gemara learns out from here. The Torah says you went to the court and the court ruled guilty. Now where do you kill him? In the city where the court is or in the city where they worship the idols? So look at the pasuk says. Ve'itzeisa to your gate where they did the sin. So the Gemara learns out, Takya, that the death penalty is carried out in the city where the idol worshiping took place, not necessarily where the verdict was. And the Sepurna says the reason for that is to show that even the locale of the city is not powerful enough to save. You know, you think, okay, I'm in hometown, I'll be safe. The Torah wants to show for idol worshiping in the city where you committed the crime, that's where you're going to get it. And the Torah says like this. This pasuk we're just going to start because there's a lot more to talk about this pasuk. Al pi shnayim edim, based on the testimony of two witnesses, a shleisha edim or three witnesses, yumas ameis, he will die. Lo yumas al pi eid achod, he will not die based on the testimony of one. Okay. So right away, Rashi asks. Okay, and this will just start today because there's a lot of discussion on this pasuk. Rashi asks, what do you mean two or three? If two is good, what do you need three for? There says, Abishnayim Edim, Ishleisha Edim, Yumas Ameis. Now, if two witnesses are good, what's the difference between two and three? So there's a ton of halachas that the Gemara learns out just from these few words. Number one, Rashi answers, what's the two or three? Because it teaches us in Edim Zemimin, let's say you have to disqualify a group to say, you guys were with us, how did you testify? Okay, you know, we're going to leave that for next time. It's going to take too long to explain. But another interesting thing, it says, Al pi shnayim edim. Torah says, it has to be on the mouth. According to Torah, testimony cannot be written.
Recorded.
It needs to be oral. And that's why, you know, everybody knows in the story of the Megillah, Mordechai understood the language because he was from the Sanhedrin and he knew 70 languages. So when Bigson and Seresh were plotting to kill Ahasuerus, right, Mordechai knew the language. So it says in the Mishnah, some of the members of the Beis Din, the big Beis Din of capital punishments, needed to know other languages. Why? Because if a witness came and spoke to me, to the Beis Din Yerushalayim, right, and they speak Greek as a testimony, and the Beis Din didn't understand Greek, and they would have to have an interpreter, it wasn't through the mouth of the witnesses. It wouldn't be valid. It wouldn't be valid. If witnesses were too lazy to go, and they wrote their testimony on paper, and they sent it to Beis Din with a bird, send the bird, FedEx of those days, pigeons, halachically, it was not a kosher testimony. Now, we learned in the Gemara a million times that by documents, the verification of documents, that's why witnesses sign a document. How could they sign it? When you sign a ksuba, you're basically signing as a witness. But the Torah says it has to be alpi shnayim edim. So it's rabbinic, because the rabbinic signing witness is rabbinic, and therefore the rabbinic made it easy for people, so therefore they said you could write it, and in rabbinic cases. But in capital punishment, by the way, if two witnesses wrote their testimony to Beis Din, notarized, signed, sealed, notarized, everything, it's worthless. They have to come and say the testimony. By the way, this is another interesting shaila today. Is DNA a legitimate proof according to Torah? No. Let's say there are no witnesses in a murder. Yeah? But the victim has DNA of the murderer. Can Beis Din kill based on DNA? And most people say no. Because it's not al pi shnayim edim. You need two witnesses. And that's not testimony. That's very good proof. But it's not that. And the Torah says, Al pi. One minute. Torah says, Al pi shnayim edim ishla yumas ameis. He can only die with the testimony of two witnesses. You can't do it with DNA. You can't do it with written testimony. You can't do it without it. Whatever.
Capital punishment.
Yeah, capital punishment. Okay.